Good evening. I'm Henry Banks, senior producer and host of People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up in a few minutes, Professor Mark Lagenfeld from Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College in Superior comes to talk about the psychological impacts of isolation and racism on African heritage and other marginalized communities. We'll also talk about racism as a public health crisis in America. All of this and more coming up next on People of Color with Henry Banks after this news. This episode of People of Color is produced by Elliot Sweary. Welcome to People of Color on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Henry Banks, and I have back in the studio once again our friend, Mark Lagenfeld. He is an instructor of psychology at the Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College in Superior, the Superior campus. And so he is a regular on our show now, and so we talk about all kinds of matters related to psychology and the implications of certain things, if you will, on communities of color in particular. Today, we're going to be talking about the social, psychological implications of racism on African heritage people. And so thank you for taking the time to come in and talk with us about this very important topic. Psychology is a very important topic, and racism is an equally important topic. And racism affects all kinds of communities. But for the sake of this conversation, I'm hoping that it will be focused more so on those implications for the African heritage community. So again, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So Mark, just kind of kick us off this evening. What does social psychological mean, just as a definition?
Well, psychological is more dealing with a person's understanding of themselves and their own emotions. And sociology is more dealing with interaction with other people, community, groups, things like that.
Sure. So as most folks know, our country's in a different place right now.
Mm-hmm.
And for all intents and purposes and for the conversation here, it seems as though a lot of African heritage people have been getting the brunt of racism in this country. And as an African heritage person myself, I felt it was necessary to really delve into what's going on in America and how this is impacting my community.
Yeah.
And so I brought you in because I know you know. I know you see things just in your interactions, not only on the college campus, but in the community you see things. Help us understand what's really happening in America right now.
My opinion is that I think there is a backlash. I think that a lot of people who were harboring racist beliefs are now feeling emboldened to come forward and to voice their racism more and display it more with showing the Confederate flag and things of that nature. Recently, I read some statistics that really disturbed my soul. Ever since Obama has been elected, there's been an increase in Google searches for racial jokes, starting with the N-word. And it has gone up 60%, according to the data that I read. And I can only imagine how much more it's gone up since the last president was elected. And so it seems to me that there's a backlash, that some of the people who hold racist attitudes are feeling threatened and therefore feel that they need to push back rather than embracing diversity, which would help everybody. They're choosing to fight back as what I might call a power struggle.
So why, in your opinion, do you believe this is happening like this?
Well, I can quote Martin Luther King, who said that prejudice is based on ignorance and fear. That's really the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it happening? Because a lot of people out there are ill-informed about these issues, and they're fearful. And when they're fearful and not very well educated, well, look at what they do. This is how they act.
Yes. So if we don't deal with the psychological implications of racism on African heritage people, yes, on other folks of color as well, but on African heritage people in this country, what, in your opinion, do you believe is going to happen if we don't deal with it?
Let's address the topic of race-related stress, because I think that's what's going to increase tremendously. For people of color, there's going to be an increase in race-related stress on all levels, at work, at home, dealing with relationships, dealing with just community, going to the stores, gas stations, things of that nature. People in stores might be watching you more if you're a person of color, thinking that you're shoplifting, things of that nature. So I think there's going to be a lot of the race-related stress increasing.
Yeah, so I was just talking to someone earlier today. That individual mentioned to me that they are always followed around in the store. Always followed around. Somebody's watching them in the store.
Yeah.
And another individual that was in that conversation said, well, here's what I do. I follow them back. I reverse it. And it suddenly goes away. Do you suggest doing something like that?
Well, I suggest doing what works.
Yeah, it works.
If it works, then fine, do it. I don't see any harm in that. It's sort of heightening the awareness mm-hmm. of the original follower, the
yes.
person who is an employee at that store. Yeah. Kind of heightens their awareness that I'm aware of what you're doing. I'm not stupid. I can tell you're following me.
Yes. Yeah. There's that. So, Mark, you've been reading some materials and background stuff for this conversation. What in that material did you pull out that was absolutely significant for this conversation?
The most severe is dealing with the mental health risk, and that would, I'm going to say, activate more with any stress that's being imposed on a person. When it comes to psychological disorders of any kind, they usually lay dormant if everything is fine. Almost always, what triggers any mental health issue is a stressor.
Mm-hmm.
And so with race-related stress increasing, the articles that I read have included that there would be an increase in psychological disorders such as depression, hypervigilance, in other words, watching over your shoulder, anger, apathy, avoidance, like staying in bed all day long,
mm-hmm.
emotional numbing, saying, I don't care, whatever. I mean, that's emotional numbing, just not wanting to feel it anymore. And then, of course, feelings of worthlessness, which in a way is very strongly related to depression. But this feeling that, oh, I'm less than.
Mm-hmm. So there's all of this incredible talent in the Twin Ports. Just in the African heritage community, all this talent that's out there, underutilized.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe it's symptomatic of all of that you just mentioned?
All of that and more.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many things going on. When a person does not feel valued, you really have to have very strong character to self-validate and give yourself value. Adults can do that if they're mentally healthy. However, children who are growing up, they haven't even established a sense of identity yet. And so I am most worried about the children, because how they think of themselves is often based on how other people treat them. Just take, for example, you know your name is Henry. Mm-hmm. How do you know? Because that's what everyone calls you. Well, what if everyone speaks down to you, mm-hmm. or treats you as less than? If you're a child with not yet a firmly established identity, you're just going to believe that you're second rate. And so that may take away the motivation to do your best and develop those talents that you speak of. And my personal experience of dealing with that is, of course, with my learning disability, dyslexia, because I was diagnosed way back in elementary school, and I was told, not you have dyslexia, but you are a dyslexic. And the teachers would refer to me as the dyslexic student. And so that became my identity. And for a long time, I was underachieving until I started developing more confidence older, in teenage years. And then certainly as an adult, the confidence grew. My hope is for all people that they develop more confidence through their experiences. We can certainly do that as an adult because we're more cerebral. But for the children with an underdeveloped brain, I really feel sorry for them, because they're going to feel less than, and therefore they're not going to feel motivated to do their best.
This is People of Color with Henry Banks. We'll be right back. I'm here with Professor Mark Lagenfeld. He's an instructor in psychology. You know, that's what he does every day. He does it quite well at the Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College. For this conversation, I just want to move forward and say that Mark joins us on a regular basis here in Superior. I'm concerned about the education, proper education, mm-hmm. of our children, especially all children, but in this case, African heritage children in a predominantly white environment. What, as a psychologist, could you offer as suggestions for parents, for professionals, teachers, administrators, to do the right thing by our children? Because there's such gaps that exist at every level of mm-hmm. education in our communities that is really troubling, and it's getting worse, not better. Mm-hmm. What would you offer as suggestions?
I recently listened to a public speaker who was a member of a Native American tribe, and he talked about how they're trying to change the reputation of education from being not cool to being cool. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is, in his experience, it's the adults, it's the parents who are going back to school and getting a degree at college. And then the kids are seeing, oh, this is okay. My aunt, my uncle, my mom, my dad, this is not something that should be avoided. I think that perhaps we can generalize that to other groups and say that people in color in general need to work on making education a valuable thing, even more valuable than they may already think of it. And so I've heard other people, and these are just face-to-face conversations that I've had, where people say, well, I'm not going to go to school. Why should I be part of the system? You know, why should I work for the man? Why should I do that and go with the, you know, capitalism? Well, if you want to succeed at whatever it is your goal is, I'm not telling you what your goal should be, but if you want to succeed at your goal, you're going to need an education in your field. So that may have to be a formal education. So I think the first thing is within the family, education needs to be placed at a higher value than it already is. And the parents need to start speaking more highly of education and encouraging their children. And maybe the parents themselves need to go back to college and get a degree and show their kids, okay, don't just listen to my words, look at my actions. I'm practicing what I preach. I'm going back to school. I'm following, you know, my values. And that has shown in some families to be a very positive influence.
So help me with this. So someone listening to the show might say, well, we don't want to go to school. Mm-hmm. We don't want to expand to a bachelor's degree or a master's degree because we've already been through that system. We don't want to go back through that stuff again. We're experienced. We have mm-hmm. a lot of experience, a lot of skills to offer without going that direction. What right. would you say to them?
I would reflect on my own experience, and I would say the difference between the public school system and high school in particular and college is a world of a difference. In high school, there's a lot of bullying, and students have to be there by law, so a lot of students don't want to be there and they don't put out much effort. And it seems to be almost like an issue of survival for some kids, including myself, just to make it through the day of high school. However, at college, you're paying a lot of money to go to college, and so the people who are there want to be there. And all those people who have a bad attitude about education, all the people who just want to quit school and cut classes, they don't go. All of those bullies, they aren't going to college because they don't value it. So you're in an environment where you're surrounded with other people who also want to learn. And so in my own experience, it was a world of difference going to college. People are focused. They want to learn. There's an excitement. They have discussions about education even after class. So it's a lot more positive, and you're not going to need to worry so much about just surviving the day and getting through the day without getting beaten up.
Mm-hmm. So African heritage people, other folks of color, Native heritage folks as well, have gone through so much mm-hmm. in this country, in this region even. It's amazing to me that so many of us have been able to survive, if you will, all of the racism and the hatred of us from people in authority in this region.
Yeah.
It's amazing the resilience within those communities.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having said all of that, Mark, that resilience means something. But for a lot of young people coming along who are new professionals, coming to the community. In fact, I talked to a young African heritage professional that has only been in this community for 1 month. That individual is already struggling because he can't connect with other folks professionally that look like him. That can be debilitating and depressing.
Yeah.
So what's that individual going to do, or what should they do to survive in this a predominantly white environment that isn't so embracing of those that are different in skin tone?
You mentioned the people of color have survived. I say yes, not without consequences. And those consequences I've already mentioned with hypervigilance and mm-hmm. depression, emotional numbing. When you talk about the question, what can professional people of color do
yes.
to survive, I want to expand that and go a little bit beyond that. Let's not just talk about survival. Let's talk about thriving.
Absolutely.
Because it's not just about can we survive. The question is, can we thrive? Mm-hmm. And my personal answer that I myself do is I focus on interconnectedness. I look beyond color barriers and I say to myself, everyone, without exception, is a member of my global family. We're all brothers and sisters, even people I don't like, mm-hmm. even people that I have an opposing point of view. I have to recognize, okay, well, I don't always like some of my brothers and sisters from my global family, yet I acknowledge that we're all part of the same race, the human race. So that's what I would do, that's what I actually do, is it helps me not only to survive, but to thrive. It helps me get through some of the stress. And there are times, even like in a crowded store, I've done this. I've been in a crowded grocery store. All the lines are full, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, so many people. And I start feeling stressed, and I start feeling angry. And then I change my attitude, and I say, you know what? Every single person in this line is a member of my global family. They're a brother or sister. And with that attitude change, suddenly it felt like a big family reunion. You know, you've been to big family reunions, lots of people waiting in line at the buffet, you know, and, mm-hmm. and I started feeling like this was a big family reunion in the crowded store. It's a change of attitude. And I'm not trying to be overly simplistic. However, I am trying to make a very good point. Interconnectedness is the word. It's the word on the front of my mind every morning when I get up. Interconnectedness.
So, okay. Professor Mark, I need to challenge you just a little bit.
Okay? Sure.
So somebody listening to what you just said, right, about interconnectedness and about the human race, that's really good, right? That's what we hope everyone would aspire to.
Mm-hmm.
However, we're not there.
No.
Help us get there, right? So if we talk about the human race, as you mentioned, there being no such thing as race, as you know what I mean,
mm-hmm.
but
social
the human
construct.
Race, the social construct is there, how do we deal with that thing we've been talking about, racism, in concert with interconnectedness and the mm-hmm. human race matter?
Allow me to quote a Vietnamese Buddhist monk, Thich Nhat Hanh is his name. He says, see yourself in everyone's eyes. So first of all, you have to be willing to do that. Because sometimes I don't want to.
Yes.
If I look at somebody that I really don't like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to name names.
Absolutely.
But there are some people in the news
that
I just don't like, and I can't stand seeing their face on the internet anymore. Sometimes I don't want to see myself in their eyes, yet I force myself to do it. It's part of my spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
So that requires that someone, first of all, be willing to see themselves in everyone else's eyes. Second thing is you then have to practice it, okay? Those two things. Yes, I'm willing to do it. Now I'm going to practice it. And keep it in the front of your mind. You have to be mindful every day. The people on the street, people at home, people that you see on the news, people in the grocery store, the gas station, everybody that you see, the cashier who might be rude or too busy to deal with you, see yourself in their eyes and realize, hey, you know what? There have been times that I've been too busy and I've been a bit short with people. I recognize that. Whatever that person's emotions are, you've had those emotions before. Research has shown this. All humans share the same range, basic emotional range, in every culture around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So you can recognize that. Even if you're not in the same mood that they're in, you can say, okay, so that person was very aggressive in driving and obnoxious. Well, hey, you know, let me confess, I've been obnoxious on the road too. Those are the type of connections where you can see yourself in someone else's eyes. So if you want to start at the beginning, everyone, ideally, needs to make the decision to be willing to see themselves in everyone else's eyes. And the people who are hardcore prejudiced, hardcore racist, they're not going to want to do that. They're going to get violent for even suggesting that.
Yes.
However, your question is, how do we make that first step? That's how.
Mm-hmm.
You got to first of all be willing.
Yes. You got to be willing to make the first step. This is People of Color with Henry Banks. We'll be right back. I'm here with Professor Mark Lagenfeld. He is a professor of psychology at Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College, the Superior Campus. He joins us now on a regular basis to talk about everything psychology. You know what, Mark? I am hearing you and I'm listening to you talk about spirituality, and that's vitally important. And so I have this campaign going on right now on Facebook where I'm trying to raise a certain amount of money to purchase some books that I will then be distributing to about 100 or 150 African heritage teenage males and up. So one is Uncle Tom's Cabin, and the other is Chokehold, Policing Black Men. So that second book is getting wide attention right now, especially in the state of Arizona. The Arizona Corrections Department has banned that book.
Oh.
Because they don't want the prisoners reading that book. They don't want them to learn about the system and how it is regarding African heritage men. And so I have a campaign, so I'm hoping people will support the campaign on my Facebook fundraiser thing to help me pay for those books, because we need to get those books in the hands of every African-American teenager and up in this Twin Ports.
You know, it's interesting. When something is taboo, it's twice as tempting.
Yes.
Twice as attractive.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, so I just found that interesting that so we're talking about all this stuff and the psychological and sociological implications of racism on our community. This is symptomatic of some of that.
Yeah.
You know, and so I know the American Civil Liberties Union is challenging the state of Arizona with what they just recently did.
Right.
You know, and so do you think this is a good approach? You know, get the books in the hands of people that will read them and utilize those books to educate themselves, you know?
I don't think in terms of good or bad. I think in terms of what's functional and what's dysfunctional.
Absolutely.
And so from a psychological perspective, looking at it as a psychological experiment, you would have to first run the experiment and then look at the results to determine whether or not it's functional.
Absolutely.
So I would just say, go ahead and try that. Yeah. And then after a period of time, look at the results and say to yourself, am I getting closer to my goal or further away? And then you can determine whether your actions are functional or not.
Yeah, these are really important books. It's, you know,
yeah.
The Harriet Beecher Stowe book, Uncle Tom's Cabin, that's a classic.
Yeah,
that book was written in 1852, and some would say was the impetus for the Civil War, you know, that got us to a point where we could recognize that, you know, slavery was, in fact, wrong. We know that.
Yeah.
But it was that book that kind of helped to shine light on it, you know, and so.
Have you ever heard the term loss aversion?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. It sounds like that's what the country is doing now. They don't want to look at things that they're not comfortable with. They have an aversion to things that, quite frankly, make them feel bad. Well, sometimes we do need to look at a problem, because denying it, ignoring it is not going to make it go away. Racism is real.
Yeah.
And if that book points it out, then they need to address it and not just look away.
Mm-hmm. And you know, we always go back to Martin Luther King quote. It seems as though Dr. King has always been in the mind's eye, if you will, of like-minded people, people that understand what racism is and the impact of racism on communities of color in general. But what racism has done to everybody.
Yep. That's the interconnectedness.
Yes.
We're all one family, and so if one member of your family is hurting, the whole family
is hurting,
regardless of skin color.
Yeah. And Dr. King said back in the 60s, that thing that would continue to keep us separate was race.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are in 2019, and we're still talking about race and racism.
One other thing that Martin Luther King said that really stuck in my mind was, he was helping prepare the people that were going to march with him. Mostly people of color, but there were some white people there too.
Absolutely.
And he was saying to them, when you meet people on the streets who are protesting us as we march, and they'll be shouting at us, and they might even be spitting on us, and they'll be screaming at us and holding up signs with hateful slogans, he said to the marchers, realize that these people are mentally ill. Racism is a form of mental illness. And he told them, remember, these people with so much hate in their heart are mentally ill. They're not healthy people, mentally speaking. And that really stuck in my mind. And I thought to myself, whenever I hear about racism and hatred, I think to myself, the perpetrators are mentally ill.
Yes.
They're sick people.
There has to be that.
They are sick.
Yes, they are. This is People of Color with Henry Banks. We'll be right back. Welcome back to People of Color. This is Henry Banks. I'm delighted that you are still with us tonight. I'm here with Professor Mark Lagenfeld, and we're going to continue our conversation here this evening. So right now, Professor Mark, recently Milwaukee County declared racism a public health crisis, identifying a variety of different issues as they relate specifically to the African heritage community of Milwaukee County. Were you surprised when this declaration came out and was signed by their executive in Milwaukee County?
I was surprised, and I'm pleasantly surprised that they're taking positive action. So, yeah, it was shocking to find out the statistics and the high rate of racism and discrimination, but it was equally pleasantly shocking to find out that they're taking action and they're moving to improve the situation.
That's a bold statement in many ways, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a slap in the face to society, a wake-up call,
mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, a friendly slap.
Yes.
It's a friendly wake-up slap that says, hey, open your eyes, take a look around.
Yeah. And Milwaukee County is not the only county in America or the only region in America where the statistics that were cited in the Milwaukee County report and declaration with regard to African heritage people, it's happening all over the country.
Yeah.
It's happening all over the country. Milwaukee County is taking that first step to start to address in a tangible way by taking that action to start to say, hey, folks, we can no longer as a county live this way, and no longer can we treat our citizens this way. This is a psychological problem that doesn't just affect African heritage people, but it affects everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And can you talk about that as a psychologist, how the impacts, again, of racism and isolation, as we've been talking about, now elevating this in Milwaukee County, saying that racism is this public health crisis. Can you help us as a psychologist walk through the necessity of really addressing this, not only in Milwaukee County, but all over the place?
I would like to use a metaphor of a family. Humans are humans. We're all one global family. To look at a community, we're looking at a family unit. So in some families, there are certain members who might be ignored. who aren't given equal status, who are thought of in a disparaging way. And in that metaphor, there are some people in our community who also aren't given equal access, who are looked down on, just like there are some members of families that are looked down on, and they're not given a break. They're not given the opportunity to even prove themselves. So when I look at a community, well, whether it's Milwaukee or Duluth Superior, we're looking at a family. And that's why, just like you said, we're all interconnected. It affects everyone. If there's one member of your family that's hurting, we're all hurting.
Absolutely. So let's bring it to Duluth Superior. Significant increases in populations of color in the region, growing relatively fast. However, there seems to be a disconnect where the unemployment rate last report in Duluth, Minnesota for African heritage people was something like 23%.
Mm. Wow.
For the white population, it was something like 4%.
Huh.
So that's a disparity that seems to be getting larger in many respects. No action. The graduation rates, home ownership rates, health access rates are lower, significantly higher in African heritage communities, but lower in larger populations, which happen to be white in this region. So those disparities continue year in and year out. It has a psychological impact, I would assume, mm-hmm. on the African heritage, Native heritage, other populations of color in these regions here, yet very little action to help me here, eradicate, diminish, get rid of these problems, because yeah. they're affecting the family here also.
Milwaukee described it as seeking solutions. And I think that's what every community needs to do and every individual needs to do as well. Seek solutions. People on an individual basis, okay, I've talked about the community, now let's talk about individuals. On an individual basis, people need to basically discover, if you will, what is their purpose in life. If you don't know your purpose, you're not going to know what direction to go. We all have a different calling. And maybe I should make that plural, callings. Because personally, I've had more than one calling in my life. It's not like you only have one. Mm-hmm. Some people might have more than one calling. Once you discover, through exploring your calling, then you need equal access to healthcare, especially for education. Okay, that's how I succeeded, was through education. Mm-hmm. Other people might want it through a family life. Everybody has their own purpose, so it varies from person to person. But when they talk in Milwaukee about seeking solutions, it needs to be from a systemic point of view, it needs to be from society, and it also needs to be individually. People need to know why they're here, why they're living, what are they living for? And then they need to have equal access so that they can fulfill their purposes.
Professor Mark Lagenfeld is here with me today. We're talking about the psychological implications and impacts on racism, isolation, as it affects African heritage and other populations of color in our region. So we talk about solutions. Solutions are presented. And then those solutions are sitting on a shelf somewhere, not being implemented.
Mm.
How can we get through that as a community, as a society? Yes, we have solutions, but are those solutions really going to be implemented to make the change happen?
Well, again,
there's a hope, right?
Yes. Oh, there's always hope.
Yeah.
Again, we can look to Milwaukee as an example, even as a role model. They said that they were going to make a commitment to making things better. Not just, oh, it's a good idea. Yeah, let's talk about that. Yeah, we really should someday. They said, we're making a commitment to the community. And so that's what needs to happen, to take those nice policies of equality off the shelf and implement them. It takes a commitment. And let's, by the way, let's not just look to our politicians to do this for us, okay? Let's all take positive action. I mean, every individual. And I'm saying positive action. I'm not saying complain. I'm not saying gripe. Positive action, and make a commitment in your heart to make things better.
So, positive action. What would one look at, or what would one say as a positive action dealing with this hard question of racism and isolation? What's a positive action to you?
I would like to start cognitively, the way we think. And the first thing that, okay, I can only speak for myself, so I'm not going to try to speak for anyone else. For me, the first thing is to acknowledge there's a problem. Step out of denial. Mm-hmm. Cut that denial off at the knees. We need to realize, yes, there is a problem. And even though it would be nice if there wasn't, we're not going to turn a blind eye to it. So that's cognitive. You have to acknowledge, yep, there's a problem. And then come up with some ideas, maybe with other people, generate some ideas, and then implement them. But the very first step is acknowledge there's a problem. Identify it. So many people will not even identify a problem. They'll just complain for the sake of complaining. And then if you ask them, so what exactly is the problem? They don't know.
Yes.
You have to decide.
Right.
Acknowledge there's a problem. What is it? Define it. And then start addressing it.
Professor Mark Lagenfeld is here, and we're talking about some real heavy stuff tonight. But I should ask you this question. So, and this happens on a regular basis. So someone comes up to a person of color, and their immediate comment is, well, you know, I don't see your color. I've heard that many times. My response always has been, well, if you don't see my color, then you don't see me. Because we as a nation have been taught to believe that there's something about one color over the other color, when in fact, it's all about the human race. Mm-hmm. So when somebody says that, how do you approach them if you hear that?
Well, my thought is they're probably denying their own prejudice, because we all have prejudice, and it's most functional when we acknowledge it and when we recognize it. I have a bias here, there. So if somebody says, oh yeah, I don't even notice skin color, my thought, and it's probably best kept silent, would be, oh, this person's in denial of their own prejudice. If that person were to engage me in conversation, I might just explore a little bit and say, so if you don't see me by a skin color, then how do you see me?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you see me as equal?
Yeah.
Do you see me as being really a part of this society where there is equity for everyone? Because that's when we know society is changing, when equity is the norm. Mm-hmm. Not equality, but equity. Because equality and equity are two totally different things.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Totally different. And so that's when, in my opinion, if it's important here to say, that's when you know people are changing, hearts are changing, when they start to recognize that it's all about equity. Right?
Yeah.
So Professor Mark, tell us, somebody might be listening right now, tell us how we get from equality to equity in the society.
To start off with equality, a person would need to realize the facts, okay, and let go of their, in the field of psychology, we use the term idealized self. This idea of, oh, I'm not prejudiced, I don't see skin color, that's their idealized self. And you talk about disparity, there's a disparity between their real self and their idealized self. And when they take certain racial tests, some of which are online, they realize, oh, I guess I do have a certain bias or a favoring of someone of my own ethnicity. So that's the first step in equality, is recognizing that your idealized self may not be your real self. And then to bring that to equity, that means equal opportunity. I think that starts with education. And I'm talking early education, elementary school, junior high, high school, college. When people realize, and I'm talking about teachers now, when teachers realize that all of these students have gifts and abilities and that they need to be fostered and encouraged in whatever talents they may have, that's where the equity can come in, because the person will learn to grow into their talents, go on in school, get whatever degree, training, certificate that they need, so that they qualify then for those jobs that can lead them to higher equity. But it starts even in elementary school. The teachers have to give equal time to the students, all of the students. And you know, there have been tons of psychological tests about how teachers look at students differently based on their preconceived notions. They even done that with eye color. Remember those tests?
Yes, they are. Yeah, and they're still doing some of that.
Yeah.
In many ways. But the eye color one is very familiar.
Yeah. A lot of people know about that one. Yeah. But it just shows that teachers have biases and that they may not give equal attention and therefore not equal encouragement. And so those students who get ignored might not feel that they can contribute to society, might not feel that they can go on and succeed, and then they don't get that equity.
Mm-hmm. You know, there have been a couple school districts that have been called out, if you will, across America, where in those school districts, the top students, valedictorians, salutatorians, were African-American students. Mm. And the occasion for the student that is the top student to give a speech didn't happen because the school districts didn't want to offend the white population in that community. So they disallowed the students to give their speeches.
Hmm.
Now, that's a serious psychological impact, I would imagine, on those students who have studied hard and achieved that academic success, and then to be told, well, you're not going to be able to give the speech, and it's because of your skin tone.
Yeah.
That's happened.
Yes, it has. And not to get off subject, but instead to make a comparison, very similar things have happened with women.
Absolutely
throughout the
right.
years
yeah.
where they have, in fact, the first women's college, the first college, I should say, that allowed women to come in, they would not allow the valedictorian to give the speech because it was a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And they said no. And so she said, I'm not going to do it. They wanted her to write the speech, but a man to give the speech. Mm-hmm. So this is nothing new.
Nothing new.
It's been happening for decades and decades.
Yeah, and other marginalized communities, the GLBT community, that's
yes.
happening there. It's happening in all of those marginalized communities are experiencing this, and it isolates you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It has a psychological impact on you.
Sure does.
On those children who have had to experience that. We call it America, but we still have a long way to go. And so it's always about bringing these things to the forefront so that people can really think about what's going on in our society all over the country, also in our local communities as well.
And doesn't this also relate back to the family metaphor? You may have somebody in the family who is into art, and then another family member who is an athlete, and the parents give more time to the athlete and give more attention and go to their events. But the student who is into art or dance or singing or drama, they don't get the equal attention. The parents don't go to those events. We hear this exact same story on a family level as well, mm-hmm. where certain things just aren't valued very much, and so those children are ignored. But then you always have that prize son or daughter who does something that the parents rally around and make sure they go to all those events. And then what happens to this event, what happens to the emotions of the member of that family that gets ignored? It's a psychologically damaging thing to believe that you're second best. Same thing happens in society, just as you described. Same thing happens when people are ignored. They feel that they're second best, second-rate citizens. What does that do to them psychologically?
That's right. We're going to continue this conversation. You're going to be coming back on a regular basis. And is there anything you want to leave that we've not talked about before we close the show? Because, like I said, you know, you're always going to be welcome here. And mm-hmm. there's going to be more stuff that I'm going to have for you come in and talk about because, you know, we're human beings and we go through things. And we need somebody who has the expertise to come in and kind of help us kind of navigate some of that.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for coming in tonight.
You're welcome.
And being a part of the show. Do you have anything else you want to say before we close?
I just thought of one thing. It's important, I think, to connect with some of our earlier ancestors and their struggles as well, because it can give us mm-hmm. encouragement. No matter who you are, no matter what your skin color or your culture, connect emotionally with your ancestors. Realize that they struggled and they got through it, and that can give you encouragement. It tells me we all come from a long line of survivors, and so we too can survive.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Professor Mark Lagenfeld from the Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College, Superior Campus. This has been an awesome conversation. Thank you all for listening tonight. Have a great evening and a great weekend.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up next week, we're going to run a previously recorded show celebrating African Heritage Music Month in the United States.